Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look out! It's only films to be buried with the resurrection.
Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried with the Resurrection. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a napkin folder, and I love films. As Helen Rowland famously once said, "You will never win if you never begin, and you will never get to the end of Reds unless you start it." That's a good shout, actually. It is a surprisingly long film. Fair play, Helen. Nice one. Thank you. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they died. Then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. But not this week. This week, I use my newly acquired shamanic powers to bring back a former guest from the dead and ask them 12 new questions. And this week, it is the comeback of the brilliant co-creator, brilliant actor, writer, genius from Ted Lasso, Coach Beard himself, is the brilliant Mr. Brendan Hunt. Now, normally, I would say to go to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you'll get an extra 20 minutes with Brendan. You get a secret, you get a video. You can find it all at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. However, this week's Patreon was so special, and Brendan shared a secret that was very moving and I thought might actually be useful to people. So I asked Brendan if he would be okay with me including it in the main section, and he agreed that he was very happy to, and that it would be a nice thing. So the Patreon is now included for everyone. I hope you find it special in the way that I did, and that's it. Your TV homework, get caught up on Ted Lasso if you haven't. It's on the Apple TV Plus app. Also, the film we made in 2015, Super Bob, is now available in the States on Amazon Prime. So get round to watching that romantic comedy. You'll fucking love it. So Brendan Hunt, you know him. He's a wonderful man. He's a very special boy. We recorded this in the office where we are writing season 3 of Ted Lasso. It was the end of the day. We went to separate offices so we could record it over the Zoom and get the audio right. However, it's quite mad because we were literally next door to each other. I think it's a really lovely one, and I think you're going to love it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 174 of Films to be Buried with. The Resurrection!
Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried with. The Resurrection! It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by an actor, a writer, a co-creator, a producer, a improver, a man that every single person I run into in the street seems to know, a father, a lover, and a Emmy winner. Please welcome to the show, the magnificent, he's back! He's back from the dead! It's the brilliant, it's Mr. Brendan Hunt!
Hey! Thanks for having me!
Oh, thanks for doing this, Brendan. For the listeners at home, Brendan and I are separated by a wall, recording this on Zoom in offices right next door to each other in a move that, frankly, is stupid.
But, you know, he cares about his audience, people. He wants his precious video. I mean, if we didn't do it this way, people couldn't watch me drink this water.
Listen, you don't know how much people, and by people I mean, of course, Brené Brown, wants to see your face. And if we did this face-to-face, we couldn't record it, and Brené Brown wouldn't be able to watch her precious Brendan's face. And that is why we're doing this.
Well, anything for Brené.
Brené deserves it. Now, tell me this, young Brendan.
Yes, sir.
We are currently working in the writer's room, season 3 of Ted Lasso. Ever heard of it? Have you found, since we, I can't remember at what point we recorded this podcast, but I think it was before, when you first did it, it was before everything happened in terms of before people watched the show. How has life changed for you? Tell me one thing that you absolutely love about it and one thing that you absolutely hate about it.
One thing I actually love about it is the ease with which I apparently can attend any soccer game in this country. And I'm calling it soccer because I'm referring to in this country, the country of the United States, with their curious naming traditions. That's been pretty great. Like, up till now, I got reared as a football fan in Europe and was going to lots of Ajax games. And then when we were doing Ted Lasso, I was going to tons of Arsenal games. And in LA, used to go to Galaxy games, now I go to LAFC games. But I've been to a couple of World Cups, but I've been to precious few United States internationals in the United States. And now I've been to 2 straight wins over Mexico in 2 different cities. And those are the biggest games we got over here. And I don't think that happens without Ted Lasso. So that part has been great.
Can I say, as a witness, the joy that any soccer fan has when they see Brendan Hunt is really wonderful to see. He is their god, and rightly so.
You know what? I don't like any of that, but I will say, I've been making these little videos before each round of World Cup qualifiers for the U.S.
Yeah, they're great.
And I've been saying, trying to get people to realize, non-soccer fans to realize, in 2026, we're going to host the World Cup. It's a big deal. Get ready. In fact, the team we're going to have on the pitch then is a team that's already playing now because they're like 18, 19, 20, and they will be in their prime in 2026. So I've been saying, these are the guys, these are the guys. Coming back from the last game I was at, which was only a week ago, a kid stops me at the Chicago airport and says, "Hey, sir," and he appears to be wearing a U.S. soccer hoodie. And I'm like, "Oh, hi, young fan. I had this made because of your videos." And I look down, and it is not a U.S. soccer crest. It says, "These are the guys," in the mode and shape of the U.S. soccer crest. And I'm like, "Oh, that's really neat."
That's amazing. You fucking invented the slogan that is going to take them all the way to the finals.
I mean,
where they will be so sweltering hot.
Slogans is all it takes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're coming home. Football's coming home has worked. It's been nothing but trophies.
It's worked so well, and arguably makes little sense, and yet it's filled with such meaning.
Brendan Hunt. You have been brought back to life. But when have you been brought back to? Is there a time you would like to come back to and change something? Any regrets you'd like to fix? Or will you come back to now?
Gosh, Gummit, I'm coming back to now.
Yeah.
I'm coming back to right now in this moment.
No regrets.
I'm not changing a damn thing. I mean, plenty of mistakes, plenty of bad choices, but here we are.
That's really nice. It's nice that you've chosen this moment, and it's also nice to know that armed with all the knowledge you had, you wouldn't go back and stop COVID from happening. So that's lovely. Thank you. Thank you so much from everyone. Lovely thing to do. I do always think that when people say, I'd go back in time and kill Hitler or whatever, you think it's a bit more complicated than going back in time. You've got to find where he is. You've got to get in his, it's not like you don't just turn up in front of him. You have to, I guess, join the Nazi party. There's a lot going on.
And Austria is not that small. If you want to even go back to baby Hitler.
Yeah.
There's more than one maternity ward in Austria. You can't just roll up.
Yeah. And at the time, he's not famous. So when you're asking people going, "Has anyone seen Adolf Hitler, the baby?" Everyone's like, "What? No, he's not even a famous son of someone."
Also a very common name in Austria. I'm looking for Hitler.
Yeah.
I mean, welcome to Spain. You're looking for Lopez? What are we talking about? Not that easy.
No, you're right to come back to now. Well done. How is... one last question that I think everyone would like to know. Mm. How is your beautiful son?
He's great.
You had a baby in England.
That's correct.
Where babies first came from. And you have a lovely British son. Beautiful British boy. You have a lovely British boy.
He's almost 10 months old, but like so much drinking. Oh my gosh. And like he can hold it down for most of the time, but then suddenly switch flips and you do not want to be around him.
Yeah, that's my boy. That's a good boy. He's a lovely, lovely boy. How do you feel 10 months into being a dad?
I mean, I feel pretty in touch with the magic of it. I mean, for lack of a less mushy word, I mean, just it's incredible. I mean, the things that people have to say about parenting, mm-hmm. you know, some are proven to be true. And the one is, they say, like, you'll never love anything more. And I've heard then people say, like, how can that be? I already love as much as I possibly can. People say, like, well, haha, you don't reappropriate that love. You mm-hmm. find a whole new section of your heart that you didn't know existed, and it's twice as big. And I mean, I find that all to be true. Like, mm-hmm. he's at a stage right now where he's very social. He loves people as long as they don't come in too hot. But so when I come home, like this little ritual now, I come in, I just open the door, and he's almost always in the living room, and I just lock eyes with him, and he like will look at me and take a moment, and this giant smile. It is like, I mean, it's literally pure, you know. And you know, he's been a little sick this last week. He's got a runny nose, and like that just, I mean, there's a lot of kids who have a lot of worse off. Of course, this is just a runny nose. He will be mm-hmm. fine, but it's his first sickness, and so. It just breaks our heart hearing him like try to breathe as he goes to sleep, and he doesn't know how to blow his nose. And you know, we have this medieval like snot sucking device, you know, to try to clear his passageways. Anyway, he's great, and he's so funny. And he sat up in his crib the other day for the first time all by himself. We saw it on video. It was captured by the very advanced surveillance to which we subject our children nowadays out of love.
I really, really love it. May I say what happened yesterday at the Apple event? Ted Lasso did a panel yesterday at the new Apple store at the Grove, and Tim Cook himself was there, the wonderful Tim Cook, and Brendan, as a very proud father, showed him the video of his son sat on a cat table farting.
I mean, you make it sound like it went to the, hey, I missed a seat. Let me show you something. You're going to love this. You know, I think I was showing the video to the lovely Juno Temple, and then she started laughing or laugh crying. And then Tim Cook over there was like, what are you looking at? I'm like, oh, well, Mr. Cook, it's just a footage of my child. And I like did a Terminator scroll of the correct way to say this to a man of Tim Cook's stature. Is it passing gas, which is a phrase I never use.
It's a really good video.
It's like, oh, they do that, don't they?
Okay, Brendan. You've come back to Earth at this specific time in the world. And you've come back. I brought you back to life because you know what? I missed you. And I thought, yeah, he's worth keeping around, actually. I think I killed him prematurely. So I brought you back. You're back to life. But in this life, weirdly, in a way that wasn't dissimilar to the heaven you were in, people are still interested in films, despite what TV would have you believe. And the first thing people want to ask you is, what was the last film you saw, Brendan Hunt?
And you know, when people ask me that, I think I'm forced to tell them, like, well, it's one of the movies that Brett Goldstein doesn't really like talking about, but it is the actual answer to this question. So I hope he'll forgive me when I say Titanic.
Wow, wow, wee, wow. I mean, absolutely fascinating. Fascinating that that's the last film you saw. If the reason it's the last film you saw is because you haven't seen a film since 1998, I'd be like, yeah, okay. But like this week, well, you watched Titanic?
Yeah, I mean, I'm presuming this question does not mean in the theater. If it does, then I have a different answer. But at home, we last night, last week, we're just flicking through channels and like, fucking A, Titanic. The channels, you know, through apps and letting the app suggest thing. And fucking A, Titanic. I had not seen Titanic since it came out in theaters. Mm-hmm. I remembered being like simultaneously impressed and underwhelmed by Titanic. I found it a bit too sentimental in a way that did not grab me.
Right.
But now, pretty good movie.
That's good to hear.
Pretty good movie, that Titanic.
It's good to hear. Well, since you described having a baby a bit like being the Grinch who stole Christmas and your heart grows two sizes bigger, then of course you love Titanic. I mean, I would imagine with a heart that big, Titanic's going to get you.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear it.
Yeah. I was very vulnerable.
You're very vulnerable. What's the last one you saw in a cinema, for the record?
I believe it's The Irishman.
Oh, great movie.
Really is. Oh, man. I was ready to be disappointed, but like, solid, solid.
Oh, I was all excited to be disappointed.
Well, all people talked about was the weird CGI and how long it was. And like, yeah, CGI is a little weird, but you know, there's spaceships can't make noises when they shoot lasers in space either. So like, we forgive some things. And it did not feel long. I mean, that thing trucked. I loved it.
Agreed. Brendan Hunt, it's a good question for you, this one. Who do you think should play you in the film of your life?
A bit torn here between the part of me that is an artist and wants to just present the truth, and then the part of me who goes to movies and sees that, like, those people are prettier than normal people. So I will create a hybrid actor named Steve Buscemi. And Steve Buscemi has been cast in the role. He's perfect. Oh.
Steve Buscemi is the best actor of his generation. Ah, what a great answer. He's got everything. He's got everything that makes you up. Listen, and for the record, I think if you asked, again, Brené Brown, who do you think should play Brendan Hunt, she'd say, fucking Brendan Hunt, you ain't going to get hotter.
Oh, Brené.
He's your movie star right there.
Oh, I wonder if Brené knows I'm going to Austin next week. I gotta get in touch with Brené.
Quick, tell her. Oh my God, yeah. you're gonna break up our marriage, and that would be really bad because she's got a very happy marriage. And God, I don't know.
Hey man,
if you two
impermanence, should... you know, impermanence is the central concept of our lives.
I don't know if you two should meet. It seems risky. Now, next question. Speaking of romance, what's the most romantic film you've ever seen?
I had a little trouble with this one, but I think the answer is Amelie.
Okay.
You know, it's not all like, you know, in fact, relatively little of it is, you know, like heterosexual couple longing for each other kind of romance. But like the movie is romantic. It just, it's a very romantic view of Paris. And that, you know, damn near the only view of it I have, but a romantic view of old shut-ins and a romantic view of forks. Like it's just a very, very lovely, lovely and effective movie. Not a great Broadway musical. It never made it to Broadway. In fact, it tried. But it really holds up.
Knowing a bit about the plays you write and the things that you're interested in, you're a very romantic man, I'd say, Brendan Hunt. How do you define romance?
I mean, I guess there's two definitions. You know, the one is, you know, kind of the version of being in love with someone that is sort of like a game. You know, because it can't just be each other's company for some reason. It also has to be well-timed boat rides through suitably placid seas.
Yeah.
But I think there's also, you know, just romantic views of things, you know, like one can have a romantic view of football. You know, one can have a romantic view of technology, I guess. But in the end, the most important thing to have a romantic view of is people and not even necessarily any individual person. And yeah, if that is the case, then I think Amelie does that.
God bless you, Brendan Hunt. What is the best film you ever saw that you never want to see again?
This one, too, I was like, gosh, I don't know. And then I thought of the answer, like, oh, that's definitely the answer. Dances with Wolves.
Really?
I think I'm good on Dances with Wolves, yeah.
That's funny. Why is that a no-go?
I retain a mild curiosity about it, but, like, I remember loving it in the theater. Like, it had been really built up. Like, this is a truly important American masterpiece from a guy who you love from Bull Durham. You don't think he has this in him, but he does. And also... the two main characters in this great, great epic of the Native American experience are white people. And that's the part where, like, I think that's going to be a problem going forward, you know?
Yes, that's a very good point.
Yeah, I mean, I bet the technique of it all is really great, and the acting is still really great, and the cinematography for sure. But, like, I'm good on that.
You can stop dancing now. Thank you. What is the best action film you've ever seen? Would you like to be in an action film? I think you'd be very good in an action film.
In the right part, yeah. I think there is, you know, there are archetypes that I could maybe do. But, you know, then what if you end up in a shitty action film? or if you have something shitty to do in an action film?
It's,
you know,
very interesting that action and romantic comedy, both of them, when they're good, amazing, quite easy to do them shitty ones. Interesting.
Yeah, and they're both like a bit inexplicable when they're inexplicable or execrable. You know, the bad one when they don't hit. Yeah, that. And I think the answer is, or my answer, is a movie that I unfortunately have not seen in a very long time and arguably has a sequel that is the better answer. But I think the answer is The Road Warrior.
Very good answer.
I mean, but now fucking Fury Road is incredible.
You're putting Road Warrior above Fury Road, okay?
I am at this time. But maybe I'm being romantic by choosing, you know, the older DNA. But but I mean, it's and I'm going to give it more points for the originality of it. You know,
yeah,
it's the first of the movies that look like Burning Man, and there's been an awful lot of movies that look like Burning Man ever since then, and a few good music videos as well. So, yeah. Road Warrior. And also, like, I think there's like an era of Mel Gibson movies where even knowing about him, what we know now, you can still like him because it was stuff that we didn't know yet. And maybe he wasn't that crazy yet. Maybe like fame drove him mad.
Mm-hmm.
But like, yeah, Road Warrior, Lethal Weapon.
What's the cutoff point?
Cutoff point is probably The Patriot.
Okay.
I don't have his oeuvre in front of me, but it's definitely before Passion of the Christ, which he's not technically in, but still.
Fascinating. So you think it's okay up to The Patriot? Of all the films, if you had to, which film do you think you could have made and why?
I think Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Really good shout.
Because Ferris Bueller's Day Off is a lot... we've talked about it a little bit actually before, I think last time. So pardon me if I'm repeating too much stuff. But like, yeah, and I think I said like I'm more Cameron than I was Ferris Bueller.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I think this is the answer here, because like Ferris Bueller is such fantasy fulfillment. And yeah, I mean, it was a teenager in Chicago in the 80s, and I'm a teenager from Chicago in the 80s. And, you know, it's sort of anti-establishment, a little bit romantic, has, you know, stream of consciousness adventures sort of, and builds to the kind of perfectly executed comedy finale that I would certainly have been aspiring to do. You know, I mean, that movie's fucking genius, but a genius that felt like it was through some kind of heightened prism, a version of my life or a life I wanted to be living. So, yeah.
I love that. I don't know if we talked about this last time, but it's interesting you think you were Cameron more than Ferris, because I'd say now you're a Ferris. You're fun. You're really good at fun. That's what I always say about you. You're fun. Like, you know how to do fun. Like, you're fun. You're, like, good at karaoke. You're, like, you can do... you're, like, fun. Like, you look across the room, you're like, who's that fun guy? Oh, it's Brendan. Like, he's fun. In a way that I admire and am jealous of, because I think you look across the room and you go, he is not fun. That guy looks like he's gonna kill us.
But then that guy goes home and he wakes up in the morning and he's all alone. He's got nothing but his pain. There's a Cameron in every Ferris. We know this.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful. What film have you pretended to like to impress people?
I have the same answer for this question as I do a question you have coming up.
Okay.
So should I wait until the second question comes and tell you?
Okay. If it's one film you're going to say later, I'll say that's the film you pretended to like.
Okay, great. All right.
Yeah, bit of fun, isn't it?
I'm not going to wager this time, however. I will make no wagers whatsoever on your ability to predict my answers. I have paid the price literally in the past.
That's the only reason I asked you back was I need a couple of quid. What is the film that you've never seen that you think it's mad you've never seen it?
There are so many. Like, you feel like you've seen a bunch of movies, and all the time someone you love or respect says, and then there's, you know, blankety blank, and it's something, of course, you should have seen by then. And you feel like such an ass. This person assumes you've seen it. Yeah, so...
give me the big one.
Which is why I try to, when someone says, like, oh, blank, and, like, they haven't seen it, I don't go, you haven't seen it! Because that's just the fucking worst. But Friday.
That is mad. What's the film you love that you don't expect anyone else to like?
Ring of Fire.
Is Ring of Fire the dragon film?
Yep.
With Christian Bale.
Yes. I think that's the name of it.
I loved it for a brief moment. You thought you've got him.
No, it's not Ring of Fire.
Yeah, but that's what you mean, right?
This is another time where I'm mentioning a movie that I haven't seen in so long. but I fucking love IMDb.
Yeah, it is Ring of Fire.
Gerard Butler, McConaughey.
Rain of Fire, of course.
Rain of Fire with a G. Yes. One letter off from a Johnny Cash autobiography. Totally different.
Rain of Fire, go on.
I mean, it's silly. And like, it's, you know, sometimes you love a movie because of like the circumstances when you saw it. And I was in Edinburgh doing the festival with Boom Chicago. And
very nice.
We had an afternoon off and like, let's go see a movie. They got movie theaters in Scotland, right? They do.
They really do.
And we went to a place called the Odeon, thinking like, this is the only theater in England called, or in Britain, called the Odeon. It's a chain, people. Turns out it's a chain. But I'll never forget that the Odeon, is where we saw Rain of Fire, like knowing nothing about it. Like, oh, there's a McConaughey movie. Oh, great, McConaughey. Sure. And, you know, the McConaissance was many years off.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, just the ludicrousness of this movie that dragons have been under London all this time. Just and they just decide to come up randomly. You know, Gerard Butler gets to dig in at Americans, which I kind of love. Yeah, it's nonsense. It's an absolute nonsense movie. And sometimes that's all you want out of a movie.
Sometimes that hits this one.
But no one else is going to like that. No one's going to like it at all because they didn't have the like right place, right time element of seeing it.
Quick sub question about your life. You mentioned Burning Man. I don't think we talked about this last time. I've been to Burning Man once. You've been many, many times. Can you please tell me about your first experience there? How come you went and did it change your life?
It did. That is a long story. It's a story that is mostly of things going quite terribly and being shown around by someone who claimed that they knew how to do Burning Man. They lied. It is also the tale of being in a van where all four of the people in the van were Israelis who'd known each other for a long time and bickered in Israeli for the entire time. I do not speak Israeli. And so it was a lot of like, and then moments of like, Brendan, it sounds terrible, but it is fine. We're just having a little chat about what our plans are for tomorrow. And then when we sort that out, we're going to come back and we're going to let you know. just going at each other. And then it was horrible for 2 days. And then like the last 5 hours was like, this place is magic. And I want to come here every time for the rest of my life.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I could get into it, but I feel like I'd be taking your time away. So it's a long thing.
Oh, man, I wouldn't know about those 5 hours. Can you give us a taste? Because people are going to be annoyed if we don't get a taste in the 5 hours.
A taste. So like it had been terrible weather. And then the last day, which is the actual burn, last day we were there, the burn is actually not that important. And now you know, but you don't know it the first time. They had to push back the burn several hours. I was unprepared. I was wearing like essentially like clothes that I had purchased because I'd been hired to MC a fetish party in Amsterdam. And like, I just moved back to the States from Amsterdam, so I didn't have a lot to go on. I did not know how to get dressed for Burning Man. So I was wearing this like shiny short sleeve shirt and essentially a dress made of straps. What I didn't know is in the desert at night, it gets fucking cold. And so I'm freezing. All the Israelis are sleeping. They told me to stay out, you know, for as long as I wanted. And, there's good music out there. The burn has happened and I'm dancing. And I for the first time in the whole 3 days, I'm making eyes with someone and she's kind of looking back at me. And she's got long red hair. She's very pale. I wonder now if she was Russian because she seemed to be alone and like didn't know kind of what was going on or what she thought about the place. She was wearing full on white lingerie, like, you know, bra, garters, lace, which is a thing you can do at Burning Man. Sure.
Sounds wonderful.
But, you know, when I dance, I go for it. She's in, she's going for it. I don't quite run up the courage to like kind of go to her, but I feel like contact has been made. And then she starts to walk away. She grabs a bag and walk away. And I track her. I see where she's going across the playa, the wide open playa, filled with lit up, you know, art cars and vehicles and lights everywhere. And I see where she's going, you know, that way. Like, great. Stop real quick. Open my backpack to pull out the Long John thermal underwear that I had packed. I'm going to put these on over my boots real quick. I see her. She's right there. And for those who have not been to Burning Man, the notion of thinking you can keep tabs on someone who is more than 7 feet away from you is highly, highly uninformed. And so I reach down, but I'm like keeping an eye on her, and I'm like grabbing. I open the plastic. I hadn't even opened the plastic of these Long Johns I'd bought, you know, on the road up. And I'm trying to get them over my boots. And like, I'm looking at her, and like, why is this a problem? And I fall into the dirt. The problem is these large Long Johns were a boy's large. So I was essentially essentially trying to fit, you know, a condom onto my leg. But I lay down there and Oscar Wilde style, I fall on my back and I look up and it's the most beautiful sky I've ever seen in my life. And I look down and it's this, you know, landscape of man-made beauty, of all these cars and lights and structures and everything. And that the combination of the natural beauty and the man-made beauty, you know, and my own stupidity being blown into my face was a powerful cocktail. And I haven't been back in, gosh, first of all, that was in 2008. I went five times total, haven't been back since 2015. And I hope I get to go back next year.
Wow.
There would be no Ted Lasso. We would not know each other. Like, it absolutely changed my life and made me a better everything I do, basically.
Oh, Brendan, I mean, I'm tempted for you to tell us more. I mean, we've all got homes to go to, but and Lady White Lingerie, never saw her again.
Suffice to say, I lost track of her in that moment. Yeah, maybe she'd been taller, but no, just didn't happen.
What a fucking story. I do want to know more, but maybe I'll ask you, you know, I suppose I'll probably see you again after this. What's the film you would show a lover as a test to see if you should be together?
I've actually done this on accident, and I thought for many years that I failed the test, but now I realize the other person failed the test.
Okay, what's the test?
So I'm living in Amsterdam, and I have this friend who is she's a professional dancer, kind of showgirl, and like we had this weird relationship where we'd met like five times in five different cities, and in Edinburgh actually was the first one, and right. We'd hit it off, and we were occasionally romantic, and I had this massive crush on her, and she'd been doing a show in Russia, and then she comes to Amsterdam to stay with me, and oh boy, in a sign of how fried my brain had become after 4.5 years of living in Amsterdam. I did not make the right decisions. And one thing was, because I'd just seen Rushmore for the first time fairly recently. Right. So, you know, she's in Amsterdam for 2-3 days. There's probably very specific things she wants to do to have a good time in Amsterdam. And I was like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to watch a movie. It's going to blow your mind, called Rushmore. It did not land with with my international showgirl friend in the way that I had hoped it would. But as the years have gone on, it has proven that maybe that, you know, I was over romanticizing. Yeah, there I go. Mm-hmm. That relationship to the point of having rose obscured glasses.
That's funny because you're like, this is me, right? This is us. This film is us. And she's like, this film is not me. I do not relate to this film about a weird little boy. But thank you for showing me. I just thought we were going to have a fun night. And I've got to watch this. You're crying, and there's this weird little boy living his life, putting on plays.
So this is Amsterdam, huh? Yeah. This is what it is. We watch indie movies inside. That's it.
Yeah. I've been outside a lot. Please, can we stay in? It's been 4.5 years. Don't make me do more drugs.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Stadtsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
What is the film that made you the most uncomfortable, Brendan Hunt?
I enjoyed Blue Velvet so much And I enjoyed Wild at Heart so much. And I was like, well, I got to go back and see what else this guy's doing. Let's check out this Eraserhead movie. I'm like, oof, look at that poster. The guy's got an eraser for a head. This is going to be great. I'm sad to say that that is one of the few movies that, despite having rented it at great cost, what, $5.99? I did not complete Eraserhead. By the time it got to the part where the tap dancing girl with all the goiters jumps around and crushes all the fetus heads, I was no longer able to suspend my disbelief that I was enjoying myself.
So you don't know what happens at the end? I mean, no one does. But you don't
know either. I don't really know what happened in the middle either.
Well, as a huge David Lynch fan, and we'll defend him to the death, I'm sad to hear that. But it is a film that will make you uncomfortable. I love it. It makes me very uncomfortable. In fact, I find it terrifying, and I don't even know why. I remember the first time I saw Eraserhead, I went to my sister. I'd been watching it in the middle of the day with headphones on. And I went to my sister and said, I'm shitting my pants. And she said, why? And I said, I'm watching Eraserhead. And she said, why is it scary? And I said, I don't know. I don't know. But I'm absolutely terrified. And that's magic. That's what you want for a film, isn't it? Abject
it
terror,
really is,
but
you've got
no idea why.
Visceral.
Yeah. If you could show a child one film only, what would it be?
I think Fantasia.
Why so?
Well, I mean, you know, you think animation right off the bat with kids, and I don't quite know, but I do think Fantasia is a goddamn magical movie. And it holds up well. Watched it again last year. Oh, shit. We talked about Fantasia last time, too. I've again brought up a film that I mentioned before, so pardon me. That's two faux pas. But I didn't talk about it in this way, so I'm going to sally forth.
Also, no one ever mentions it. You're the only person who's mentioned it ever on this show. So
really?
I think it's allowed a repeat.
I mean, it's as an adult, it's just great. Like, they took such big swings with it in ways they didn't have to do. And, I mean, it's great. And I think there's just so much in it for kids. And it's like a wide variety of things. It's like, it's delightful and it's scary and it's heroic and it's beautiful. And, you know, I like kids learning about music as well. You know, I like classical music getting its shot with kids. So, yeah, Fantasia, it's lovely.
Speaking of big swings, can we talk about this? We can cut it. But I would love to ask you, you know, publicly, in season 2 of Ted Lasso, we made an episode, Beard After Hours, in which it was a beard episode, and it was Beard goes on a wild night. And so it was quite a long shoot, that one, because there was very high, you know, big stuff happening, stunts and lots of locations and lots of stuff. How was it?
A lot of nighttime.
For you? You were brilliant and magnificent, and I'm very proud of the episode and everything you did in it. But how actually was it for you to be in that position? Did you find it stressful? Was it a joy? Did you feel pressure? Like, how was it?
I didn't feel pressure, but only because there's a part of my brain sometimes that, I mean, my brain lets a lot of bad feelings in, you know, or at least there's a lot of bad feelings trying to get in. But there's a part of my brain that successfully goes, this bad feeling is really not going to help you. And specifically, this bad feeling is not going to help you do your job.
Right.
And pressure was one that I was able to identify, I guess, and like just didn't let it in. So it was partially a joy and was partially incredibly stressful and tiring. A joy because, you know, since you and Joe had written that episode, like I just felt very taken care of, and, you know, and we were in the hands of the great Sam Jones. So it was like, I don't have to worry about a lot of that stuff. You know, like these are my friends and they want good things for me. So this is fun. But, you know, just physically very tiring for a guy whose Pilates studios had all closed down due to a pandemic and had been lugging his fish and chips ass around London for 5 months. So yeah, it was very like tiring, these night shoots, and you know, the other episodes we were shooting at the same time needed me for some day shoots.
Fucking hell, I remember
which
that.
I myself offered to go in to do that because I'm a goddamn hero. But also an idiot. Like, I should have been saving my energy. And as I've said publicly, I will say again, I don't think I did my best dancing. I think I could have been dancing better.
Oh, you fucking joking.
If I hadn't been running so much in earlier episodes and just,
joking.
Getting cramped.
You can
That's
dance better?
Theragun. Theragun's very powerful. Yeah, like, it's all arm dancing in that episode because my legs were just jacked from all the running away from the hooligans.
Right, there's two things I'm going to say. One is, this is from, three things. One, it was really, really fun when we shot that because it was all night shoots. We were all together, and you, me, and Joe, and Sam, and it was really fun. And we had, like, lunchtime, which was always, like, midnight was really fun, always fun. But, like, yeah. The day we filmed the nightclub sequence, not only were you brilliant, but, like, you were kind of conducting a massive room of extras all dressed up Burning Man style, and like we did a couple of takes. You were dancing all fucking day, and there was a bit where you sort of talked them through how we were going to do it, and you like danced, you like choreographed them, you danced, like you did a thing where you crouched down really slow and then you popped up, and I was like, this is wonderful, this is just really, really great. And then the other thing I'll say is, if you don't mind, Thierry Henry is one of your heroes, correct? And you have, yes, been a huge, absolutely, football fan. And we had Thierry Henry and Gary Lineker in this episode. And they were both brilliant and lovely. And we had a nice time with them. But there was a moment, I'd spent more time with them because you were busy. And there was a moment where it was like lunch. And Thierry and Gary were in a room together. And you came into that room. And I left you alone so that you could have lunch with Gary Lineker and Thierry Henry. And you were in there for an hour, just like locked in a room, the three of you. And you came out and you looked like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Twins after he loses his virginity. You had the same look on your face. And I said to you, was that the best moment of your life? Like, rank it, birth of your son, lunch with Thierry and Gary. I don't know if you ever were able to rank them.
It's a personal question, Brett. I'm not going to answer that. I'm definitely not going to answer it in public. That's untoward of you.
That was a very special time. Very special day. Oh, yeah. And also, you tell us. How was that lunch?
I mean, it was great. I mean, they, you think, like, you meet these guys, you know, or athletes or whatever, and you're like, oh, I don't want to talk about football with them. I'm sure they get tired of talking about football. All they want to talk about is football. All they want to talk about. I mean, I got the sense that Lineker, even more than Henri, was like football, and Thierry Henry was happy to go along for the ride. But like, you know, like the French national team roster came in for the Euros while we were there. Like Thierry Henry was like, you know, having like little celebrations and stuff. And you know, they both played at Barcelona. They both had things to say about Barcelona. And I tried to just not ask any questions. You know, and these guys just chatted it up the whole time. Yeah, it was just really, really cool. They sure love Lionel Messi. Tell you what.
Good stuff. There's a little bit of insider knowledge for you. It's a little bit of gossip. They actually really like Messi. They think he's really good. It's a controversial opinion, but they actually think he's really good.
Breaking!
There's the pool quote when this episode comes out. Brendan spills. Do, 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 do. Welcome to the Patreon section. Oh, welcome back, Brendan Hunt. Lovely to have you back. The VIPs have been asking for you. That's another reason I brought you back, because they're all like, where has he gone? He was the most fun. I said, he is fun. He's fucking fun. That's like his thing. He's really fun. I don't know how he does it. I want to learn his ways. First thing they want to know is, have you got a secret for them? Have you got a new secret? You've never told anyone?
I mean, what comes to mind is not a fun secret, but, you know, we talk about things here. Mm-hmm. You don't want to hear about a non-fun secret?
No, of course I do. Brett, as long as you're comfortable.
Please, Luke, tell me a secret. Okay, it's not fun.
No, of course you can share here.
It's a distant sadness. But, you know, I talked about your last time about, like, you know, high school was rough. But there was a period in high school where I wanted to die, and I slept with, I basically had opened a bottle of Tylenol, you know, which I think is ibuprofen, maybe it's acetaminophen, but over the counter painkillers. And I just emptied it out under my pillow so it could just be there. So when, at a moment's notice, when I'd finally had enough of, you know, life, I wouldn't have to go through the extra step of trying to open one of those bottles. I mean, they're childproof. I'm childproof, and I was technically a child. So that was an obstacle I had to remove from the process. And eventually my mother found it, and she, you know, she like
made me write down the addresses and phone numbers of all my friends, because at that point she just thought I was going to run away too, which I eventually did.
Brendan.
Yeah, I was really quite close to at least a solid attempt at ending things, and golly, I'm sure glad I didn't, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
things get better.
I speak for everyone when I say I'm very glad you didn't, and I'm very sad to hear that. And I wonder if was it a incremental changes, or was there one thing, like, was there a specific thing you can remember where you were like, I don't feel that way anymore?
Great question. I think it was incremental, but I think the main thing was going to college, you know, getting out of the house and, you know, no longer being in a, you know, kind of a dysfunctional domestic setting, a domestic setting with good intentions, but poor execution. And to be just not there at all was really good for me. And then further to be in a theater program, you know, where it was really about like, hey, let's talk about your shit, because, you know, if you talk about your shit, then it weighs you down just a little bit less. And I think that is an absolute truth. And that's why people should go to therapy. And people who are like, yeah, theater people, isn't theater just therapy? Like, fuck you for being right. That's very rude. How dare you? So, yeah, you know, I guess all that is, you know, why did I not kill myself? Because of I went to a different process, the process of finding myself a bit more instead. Oh, no. Brett, no, Brett, don't do this. Oh, Roy Kent's not so mean, people. He was smiling that whole time. Oh, come on, Camille, Misty in here. Where is he?
Right.
Where is he? Get in there.
So, Brendan Hunt.
So hang in there, people. Hang in there. You never know. You never know what might get sorted before too long.
Thank you for sharing that, Brendan. What is the best soundtrack to a film?
This is a very tough question on the one hand, but on the other hand, there's only one right answer, and it's Purple Rain.
Love
because
it.
Purple Rain is one of the best albums of all time, so it must be one of the best soundtracks of all time. I mean, that is nine amazing songs lined up perfectly. It's just exquisite. It is absolutely perfect. It is one of the greatest artists we've ever had at the peak of his powers. And yes, I know he made approximately 50 other albums, but I mean, Purple Rain is fucking it.
Very, very good.
Ooh, I burped a little.
Little treat for the patrons. It's a fucking banger, Purple Rain. I mean, it is. Come on. Come on. Why are you all complaining? It's a banger. What's the best film to watch on a plane?
I have rules about watching a movie on a plane. I don't like watching big movies on a plane. I want to watch a small movie that is perhaps TV-sized. For that reason, I have chosen The Odd Couple. Now, as you know, these people might not, that I've done a lot of watching The Odd Couple, to, you know, as research for a play that I wrote that is, you know, has very Odd Couple inspired. But The Odd Couple is not well directed as a film. It is not visually striking. It is very dated. But the fucking performances are unbelievable. Jack Lemmon himself, already amazing. And as good as Jack Lemmon is in that movie, Walter Matthau might be twice as good. Mm-hmm. Walter Matthau, I think, gives in that film one of the greatest single comedic performances of all time on film. He's fucking incredible in that movie. I highly recommend it. Again, the movie itself, not perfect. Not perfect. I wish you wish Mike Nichols had directed it like he directed the play, but Walter Matthau, worth the price of admission.
That is a really, really good, unusual, and very smart answer.
I did good.
10 points. 10 points. Wow. First time you've scored, actually, is it? What is, if you could only show your parents one film, what would it be? What film would you like to show your parents?
Oh, boy. See, now I'm going to take a walk down childhood trauma one more time.
Oh, God.
What I wrote down is not that great an answer.
I'm going to have to run around again. Oh, God.
But I'll go. Philomena. Philomena. I'm more thinking of my mom than my dad. Now, my mom was not, you know, held hostage in a Irish nunnery by any means.
Okay,
but she,
good news.
She did have a child very young, and due to the social mores at the time, had to go away and let that child be given up for adoption. Fun fact, that girl has found us, and now I have an older sister. So that's kind of lovely. But, you know, I think my mom never quite gave herself enough credit for, A, that being a very traumatic event for her, mm-hmm. and B, that other people had gone through it. And, you know, Philomena is a fantastic movie. And, you know, I was really struck by, like, it's the first time I've seen that has taken this sort of moment in time of the Catholic Church misusing its power and kind of gave you a hint of, like, the scope of it, but in a very, like, personal way. And I think it would have helped my mom know that she wasn't alone.
Hmm. All right, I'm going to give you 30 points for that.
Woo! So now, what film have I pretended to like to impress people?
Oh, okay. The film, it's Eraserhead.
Yeah! Eraserhead. Oh, yeah, no, David Lynch, he's the best. He's never...
He is the best.
He's never had a swing and a miss. Never once.
You shut your mouth. I'm taking 10 points off of that.
I'm due for a rewatch. David Lynch, obviously a genius, doesn't need my approval. But yeah, it was. I just got to it at the wrong time. As much as I came to Reign of Fire at the exact right time, the inverse was true for Eraserhead. But that, you know, that's boring because those movies show up in the same sentence all the time. And here we are again talking about the Eraserhead Reign of Fire dichotomy.
Brendan Hunt, you have been wonderful as always. I'm glad I brought you back to life, and having listened to your answers to these questions, I've decided I'm gonna let you live.
Wow.
Maybe not forever. So watch your back, son.
Oh, that's fair.
Watch your back. But before we go, my lawyer's here, your lawyer, and he wants, you're doing your will. I don't know if you knew about that. And the lawyer wants to know, what is the one DVD you would leave to your loved ones?
I guess I got to go with good old Yellow Submarine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's there's a lot of the DNA of what made me in that movie. And a lot of, one real big ending that tells you a real good message for all you need truly is love.
Hmm.
And the animation holds up, and some of the jokes hold up. You know, Submarine, have a good time.
Brendan Hunt, I bloody love you there. I mean, I've said it. It's out there. Thank you for doing this.
I love you, Brett. I'm not going to run over there and hug you, but I do love you. But two, if you had a double Patreon, they'd get two hugs. But Patreon is a one-hug situation, right?
It's a one-hug.
Until they really start to cough it up, you know what I mean?
You want the hugs, you got to pay. Is there anything other than Ted Lasso that people should be looking out for with you or listening to or anything you would like to promote? You have a play coming?
I have a play going up next summer at the Kirk Douglas Theater, a show called The Art Couple, and it was supposed to go up on March 18th of 2020, but then Tom Hanks got sick and a lot of stuff got canceled. The sets were up, it was ready to go, and it's been announced as going up next summer, but now Ted Lasso might be getting in the way of that. We'll see. Hopefully it can still happen. They just might have the dates around. But The Art Couple at the Kirk Douglas in the summer of 2021. Knock wood on all that.
Very, very good. Brendan Hunt, have a wonderful life. Love to your boy. Good day to you, sir.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
So that was episode 174. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you can see the video with Brendan and lots of other guest stuff is there. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, and write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's a very nice thing to read, helps with numbers, etc., etc., blah, blah, blah. You get the gist by this point. Thank you so much to Brendan for doing the show. Thanks for sharing his secret with us. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week. I will be joined by another amazing guest. I won't tell you who, but it's a really great one. As usual, come on. I hope you're all well. Thank you for listening. So that is it for now. Have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind. Sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees, and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism, and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.